Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday through Friday from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Running out of air today, are we? I got to join the gym again, you and me.
Get one of those winter colds and all the lungs are out of you.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk...
No. We have to talk. We had a funny occasion on Wednesday, Francis and I. Those of you who listened to the show on Wednesday heard us talk of...
I'm going to tell the story again.
I'm going to tell the... Not only am I going to tell the story
tell
again,
the end
I'm
going to
tell the new ending of the story. Actually, I may let you tell the new ending of the story.
You want me to do the setup?
Sure.
All right, we noticed on Wednesday morning or Tuesday Saturday night that there's a photograph missing from the lobby of the elevator lobby, and it's in a custom frame, and it's a custom retouched restored photograph of
my grandparents.
So, because we're a second floor, the Catherine Lombardi's a second floor restaurant.
Somebody has decided that they want a picture of Eddie and Catherine Lombardi.
From 1926. So, because it's a second floor restaurant, we have security cameras installed in the first floor lobby and the first floor stairway. So, the bartender, one of the rules of setting up a bar, one of our rules is you always want the bartender to be able to see the door. It's very important. Well...
Second floor restaurant, really hard to do.
Bartender can't see the door, so we have cameras so the bartender can see the door. And what the heck, we threw a recorder on there. So there's this photograph of Marsh's grandparents are missing. And we didn't really terribly secure it to the wall because we thought, who the heck would want a picture of somebody else's grandparents? Anyway, so we find the picture's gone. We see the guy. We see who it is. We know who it is. I watch the man. A 40-year-old man steal a photograph off the
wall.
Take
a picture off the wall.
I'm shocked.
Francis, I don't think he was stealing it.
No, you're right. He was not stealing
it. I think he was...
Taking it.
Taking it and knew full well that we... He obviously saw the camera in the room and knew.
That's why Mark put it on his bill. So the guy calls a couple of days later and he says, hey, there's this charge. And he's got an attitude. He's got a bit of a toot. He's like, there's this charge on my bill and I want to speak to a manager immediately. Now, of course, the office manager has been instructed to forward this call to Mark directly. Goes right up the chain. And we're like, oh, yeah, Mr. Blank, that's a charge for artwork. Artwork? I didn't buy any artwork. He said, oh, well, there, yeah, well, you remember the artwork of the Catherine Lombardi that you took?
We were sure you wanted to pay for it because you took it.
What he said, oh, I was with a younger couple, and it must have been them.
And then, actually, you were talking to him on the phone, and tell him you said something, and then he said something, and you need to share that.
And I said, he didn't know that I had a picture of him, right? So I said, oh, well, would the younger couple have been a gentleman? I know it's him. Mm. I said, would the younger gentleman have been wearing a CBGB's T-shirt? Yeah. Can I return this? Certainly.
No. Here's what you said, and I was sitting next to you when you spoke to him. I said, yeah, I have a video of a man taking a picture off the wall wearing a CBGB shirt. And you said, what your words are that he said at that moment was, oh.
And then he said, can I return it? And I said, sure, you can return it for there'll be a restocking fee. Because honestly,
we have to order a new frame.
We ordered a new frame, and we went back to the person who retouched the photograph and had them retouch the old photograph again, because we didn't save the file. Foolish. And so for that charge, we took it back. But you know what he had to do? He had to come back to the restaurant.
Here's your picture back. I'm sorry.
He really didn't. He wanted that to be over.
Can I tell you something that was very, very amusing, though? Yeah. One of my favorite parts of it. I was standing there talking to somebody who had listened to us on Wednesday. This happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was standing there talking to somebody who had listened to us on the radio talk about the fact that the picture was missing. And while I'm talking to them, this guy walks in with the picture. And they're like, is that the guy? Like, I believe it is.
You know, what was, as we were, you know, it's funny because we had never had a camera before. And, right. And that's actually the latest rage in a lot of the top restaurants in New York have cameras pointed at the tables and
right,
watch
to
the
make
food delivery.
To make sure that you're
smile.
Having a good time. Right, that you're smiling enough and see how much food you eat off your plate.
And that's a little creepy to me. I don't want to do that.
I totally agree. I don't want somebody watching me while I'm eating. Holding my wife's hand. I have no desire to.
I will tell you the one thing that I suggested, though, when we... we love this camera thing. We're like, it's so cool. So when we found the guy, what we suggest... We looked him up, and we found him. But we said, well... And more importantly, we found his bill, so we just added it to his bill. We knew he'd find us. But what I thought was funny was... what I wanted to do as a matter of, you know, enforcement rather than to charge him for it, is I wanted to take his picture that we got from the security camera, and I wanted to put it where the Catherine Lombardi picture had been, and I wanted to say, this is the man who took the picture from there. You see this man?
I have to say that the petty side of me has considered putting this video up on YouTube and spreading it around the nation.
We're not going to do that.
It's
all over. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today, and we'll get to before the new year, is we have up on our website, we have a recipe for a Tom and Jerry, which is a hot Christmas drink. It was invented by Jerry Thomas around the turn of the century.
We talked about that with Anthony Giulio this week.
It is a super holiday drink to have around. We've gotten some good feedback from people who've tried it out. You make basically a batter that you can keep in the refrigerator, and then when people come over, you put it in the bottom of a glass, fill it with hot water, grate a little nutmeg on the top.
The good thing about it, especially if you're the type of family or household that has a lot of people stop over during the course of the day, like my grandmother's house, there was forever people stopping by. Well, if you have Tom and Jerry batter, pretty much all you're doing is you're adding hot water and liquor, and you've made a spectacular winter cocktail.
Right, it's like making a fresh eggnog to order when someone comes over.
It's a little bit like having cookie dough ready and putting a set of fresh cookies in every time someone wants a cookie.
Well, and also, I'll tell you, we know we have a lot of industry folks who listen to the show on the podcast. It's a great thing to have behind your bar in the cold weather. Tom and Jerry batter, mix up a Tom and Jerry for somebody. It's got a lot of history to it. Again, you can find it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And to have a little of that behind the bar really, I think, puts you in the league of top cocktailians.
For sure.
And seasonal cocktailians. We have coming on the show in just a moment, Terrence Brennan. Terrence is the chef proprietor of our artisanal brasserie and also restaurant Pichelin and also artisanal the cheese supplier, where you hear us talk about cheese all the time, and we're going to talk about game birds and cheese with probably the top guy we can talk to in New York and therefore in America about those topics in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Now, Terrence Brennan is the owner of Pichelin Restaurant. He also owns artisanal premium cheese and artisanal brasserie in New York City. He is one of the most lauded chefs in New York for a number of reasons, but principal among them are his use of game birds and also of cheese. We're going to talk with him about his recent 3-star review in the New York Times and about game birds and seasonal cuisine in general.
Terrence Brennan, welcome to the show.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. Terrence, I have to admit something to you.
You've never been to the restaurant.
No. Back in the early 90s, when really there were no good cheese boards around except for yours.
Right.
I used to go to your restaurant either before or after I'd go to other people's restaurant and have the cheese course.
Cool.
All the time. I do it all the time.
Well, I like that.
Whether I was going to your restaurant for dinner or not, I was having your cheese course.
All right. As long as you have the cheese.
Pichelin Restaurant is located hard by Lincoln Center in New York City, and I would go there often. You know, I like ballet and Midsummer Night Swing in the summertime. You started sort of a European-style cheese board at Pichelin way back when, and it was pretty much you and maybe Roger DeGorn down at Chanterelle Restaurant who were sort of... you know, out there preaching to in the field.
Yes.
What made you start that, and what was that like bringing cheese to America? Because it really, you and I think Roger are principally important for making the cheese course sort of de rigueur at any top fine dining restaurant in America. It didn't always used to be that way.
Yeah, I think, certainly I think any restaurant with its grain of salt has to have a cheese course, not just a cheese plate, but a course that's done correctly. Not just some, cheese that's, in the refrigerator and they have it as an amenity.
Let me stop you right there, because I agree. Why don't we explain to our listeners, though, what you mean by the difference between just a cheese plate, cheeses in the refrigerator, and a proper cheese course?
Well, a cheese plate, for example, if sometimes every once in a while, even now, I run to a restaurant, or you go back years ago, and maybe a French restaurant, just because they're French, they'd have to put on the menu, cheese plate. And what that normally implies is that they have a few cheeses, maybe three or four cheeses that no one really takes care of. It's in the ice box, and if someone happens to order a cheese plate, then they'll take it out and cut a couple cold slices and slap it on a plate and serve it.
I worked at a place once where one of the cheeses on the cheese course would be whatever the goat cheese that they were putting into the goat cheese salad rolled in cracked peppercorns.
Yeah.
That would be one of the cheeses.
Can I share with you, if those of you who haven't picked up the subtlety of when a chef talks about a certain kind of preparation and he uses the word slop on a plate, he's not being complimentary.
Thing. That's not a good thing.
So talk about what makes the minimum of a good cheese course in a restaurant. Because in Jersey, we now have some restaurants that have, I think we were one of the first to have a real cheese course out here.
Yeah, I think it's certainly, it is becoming the norm now, I think all the better, everyone's all the better for it. But what I mean by a cheese program, and this is what I preach, we sell to a lot of restaurants from the Cheese Center, my wholesale company, and we offer a lot of advice and our salespeople and training and etc. And what I mean by that is someone takes accountability for the cheese course, whether it's a sous chef, whether it's a maitre d'. In our case, we have a maître fromager, we have someone just like a sommelier take care of a cheese because we have such a large program and we sell so much of it. So we have a maître fromager, but certainly you can't expect every small restaurant to have that salary. But someone who takes a great interest, that has passion for cheese and takes great care of it. And then also that person trains the staff so the staff can communicate to the customers what is matured and what's perfect and explain the cheese, because it's still a very early in the cuisine in this country to really make it similar to the European cheese course. So education is a big part of it. So you need someone that knows cheeses, that can explain it. It's better to have it on display and not just have the cheese plate on the menu on the dessert, because if people don't see it and your staff doesn't talk about it, you're just going to sell a couple cheese plates a night. So that's the difference between a cheese plate and then a cheese program. People, the staff's involved in it. They're interested in it. They're buying high-quality artisanal cheeses. They're serving it at the right temperature. They're serving it with the right garnish, and they're serving it with passion.
Let's talk about serving cheeses when they're mature, and the cheese, the maître de fromager, their job there, and I think people may think that, if cheese is on display or cheese is at your supermarket, it's ready to eat. And I think we should talk to people about, maturing
cheese.
Cheese
is a living thing, yeah.
Right. Well, that's a complicated kind of longer. I'll give you the short of it, but basically, the mature cheese or the art of affinage is you're taking a cheese from point A to point B, and depending on the cheese and the flavor and taste profile that the cheese maker is trying to achieve, the maturing process is the process that gets the cheese to where it's at perfect ripeness and peak flavor.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So some cheeses, the cheese maker finishes the cheese in his own caves, and that's where the cheese should be. And we would keep it in our cheese caves at a perfect temperature and humidity to just maintain that very, very high quality. About 60% of our cheeses, we do mature them to a different peakness and ripeness, or we add a mold to it, or For example, PLOS is ever so present now. You know, 10 years ago, no one knew what a PLOS was. But that can be varied degrees of the pate, and the inside of the cheese is called the pate or the paste. And that could be kind of semi-soft to creamy and runny. And I prefer it creamy and runny, so we continue to mature it and spray it with Marc de Bourgogne and mature it in our caves until it breaks down a little more and gets kind of runny, so it's spoonable.
When we come back, we're going to talk more with Terrence Brennan, one of the top chefs in New York, about cheese and game birds and his fine restaurants in New York. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking with Terrence Brennan, owner of Picholine and Artisanal Restaurants in Manhattan, as well as Artisanal Premium Cheese. You know, we're talking about cheese. Now Terrence was one of the people who sort of changed the way America eats and sort of introduced the cheese course. He was one of the first ones to introduce our true European-style cheese course to America. We started about 12 years ago with a similar program.
Smaller.
Of course. Did you find that, and for all the enthusiasm you were greeted with by the press, did you find that any resistance from customers who were sort of reticent, Americans who were reticent to pay for something that they view as something that's, you know, a finished product that you just slice and go, why should I pay for that?
Absolutely not. We found the exact opposite, actually. And, you know, the metropolitan area is very cosmopolitan. A lot of our guests, I'm sure your guests, have traveled, you know, to Europe and if not the world. So they're very well traveled. They always say, oh, I remember the cheese course when I was eating here, when I was in France or I was in Europe. So we didn't find that at all. We found that there's a big interest in it. And I think cheese is the new wine and people are very intrigued by it in the stories, but they're not, what I find interesting is they're not as intimidated as wine, which cheese is much more complex. There's a lot more different varieties and cheese than there are the grapes and wine. So it's funny because it's just cheese after all, but it's also a very intriguing and very, you know, it can be complicated as far as trying to absorb all the information that's out there.
Well, one of the interesting differences that you have in cheese that you don't have in wine, and we'll talk about époisse, that's a cheese you mentioned in the last segment, you may have two pieces of époisse from the same farm that were made a week apart that taste completely different, where you wouldn't really have that with, the 1997 such-and-such Cabernet.
Cheese is the new wine. You heard it here on The Restaurant Guys. We'll be back after the news talking more with Terrence Brennan. We're going to talk about game birds, which are in season right now, and you can try at Picholine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Terrence Brennan is the owner of Picheline Restaurant Artisanal Brasserie and Artisanal Premium Cheese. He's been thrice nominated for Best New York Chef by the James Beard Foundation, and he joins us today. We've been talking about cheese before the news, and after the news, which is now, we're going to be talking about game birds. Now, you're the sort of the game bird guy for New York City. Isn't that true, Chef?
Yes.
Now, it's illegal to sell wild game birds, because I used to hunt with my dad quite a bit. And,
right.
It's illegal to sell game birds shot in America. How do you get around that? Are you breaking the law?
I import them from Scotland.
Now, why is it? This brings up a larger issue, and then we'll get to talk with what you do from them. I knew the answer to that question going in, but why is it illegal to have game birds from the U.S. but legal to get them from Scotland?
Right before the Depression, a lot of the game birds were depleted in America, so the government stepped in and set up these the regulations of not being able to hunt game birds for resale, and then also what also helped deplete that too is during the Depression, people actually were hunting for food. And I'm not sure if I have this date right, but back in 1948 or 68, I'm not quite sure, there are only like 24 deer left in the state of New Jersey. So, and what had happened is the government helped subsidize these game farms.
Terrence, I think there's 24 in my backyard now.
Exactly. I live in Connecticut. Exactly. So I think we're okay now. But the government, supported these game farms. And they just never took those laws off the book. So you can go hunt personally and eat your hunt, your kill. Also, as a chef, a friend of mine or you guys could go hunting and bring the birds to me, and I can cook them for you in my restaurant, but I can't sell them to you.
So tell me why we would prefer a wild game bird over a domestic.
Yeah, this focus
very, very simple. Taste, flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different. Not completely different. I mean, it baffles me when people sometimes order and say, "Oh God, it's too gamey." It's like, hello,
that's why
it's wild game.
We call it game for a reason.
So people are used to the farm-raised pheasant, which tastes like maybe if you're lucky, some dark meat turkey. I don't know, but we work with 5 or 6 different game birds, and they vary in degrees of gaminess.
Now, what game birds are you working with right now at Picheline?
I work with grouse season's over. That's one of the most one of the most highly prized of game birds. That starts in actually in August. It's kind of weird because it's so hot outside and grouse season starts. But so grouse, but that's that season just ended a little while ago. Partridge, red leg partridge. Wild pheasant, wild wood pigeon, which is like pigeon, but it's a very, very dark meat. Woodcock. It's not a game bird, but we do wild hare, which is probably the gamiest of all. It's a dark, really dark, rich meat of a wild hare, of a rabbit. Well, it's not a rabbit, but it's a hare. But.
Now talk to us. I mean, the thing is, a lot of chefs, because we don't get it domestically, and these are not inexpensive to bring in shot birds from Scotland, and each bird, it's not like the same preparation can be used for each bird. How do you treat these birds differently, and how different are they as a chef?
Right. Well, we offer as many, like up to 5 different birds in any given evening. So I do 2 preparations a night, one for the lighter meats, being the partridges and the pheasants, which is like a dark, it's like a darker maybe the leg of a chicken, that kind of color. So I'll do a lighter preparation for that, perhaps a celery egg salad with a foie gras dressing and truffles. For the heavier birds, we also do mallard duck, by the way. That's the one bird I was missing. We'll do like a red cabbage confit with a celery egg puree and a bit of chocolate sauce. So for the redder, darker, heavier meats, I do a heavier garnish, and for the lighter ones, I'll do a lighter preparation, and then I also do a pot of foo on the game tasting menu. I do a game tasting menu, which is very popular, and every course has a game. We can start with a boudin of a pheasant, and then we go to you know, partridge, and then we go through like 7 courses of different game dishes.
Okay, let me tell you something. I'm coming the week between Christmas and New Year's. You will see me.
Until February, then it's all gone.
Well, you know, and now that's the other thing. These are seasonal, and these are seasonal and fresh meats all the way from Scotland. So right. So there is a season to it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you can find some because they'll freeze them, but I don't buy any frozen products. But yeah, there is definitely a season to it. That's what makes it so exciting for me as a chef, because I do cook seasonally. So you know, you won't see a tomato on my menu right now. I know it's hard to do in an Italian restaurant. You got to have that. You got to buy the best tomato or good canned tomato that you
can.
Actually,
what we do is we buy 2,000 pounds or actually 8,000 pounds of Jersey tomatoes from a farm locally in August, and we put them up.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'm coming to your place for dinner then. So, yeah, the game birds go out, and then that's what gets me so excited in the fall. Fall is my favorite time. You know, each season, it seems, is my favorite time of year.
No, I love to eat the fall.
Yeah.
Eat
you
the
know,
fall
white
is
truffle,
amazing.
Wild game, the slow cooking, braising. You know, the sauces and things. And
now, is there a macho element to guys coming in saying they like to eat game birds?
I don't know about macho. It's
Yeah, macho is like I eat bears. You know, macho isn't necessarily
a
like
adventurous.
The guy goes out hunting. I don't do that. I can't go at 4 o'clock in the morning and you know go out there and. Although I would love to game bird hunt, but I can't sit in one of those things in a tree waiting for a deer to walk by.
No. And there's a couple of great places out in Jersey where you can go game bird hunting as a private club. That's awesome.
Well, I'm trying to organize a Scottish trip next year.
Oh, that's
great. You guys
want
to go?
Yes.
I'll have our producer give you the email address.
Yeah.
We'll broadcast live. Gunshots right. In the background. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, we'll try to subsidize it, get the government, Scotland's government to help us out. And
you know what I like about you, Terrence, is you've got a bit of an attitude. And to buttress that point that I just made, I'm going to quote from your 3-star review in the New York Times. And this is written by...
This is just a few weeks ago. This was written.
Right. And I was very amused by this. This is Frank Bruni writing in the New York Times. He writes, American restaurants aren't permitted to sell wild game shot in this country, but they can import it from Scotland. That's what Mr. Brennan does. And the menu carries an intriguing caveat. Bird shot may be present. When he spoke to Terrence Brennan on the phone, Terrence said, "Did you get any?" he asked Frank Bruni on the telephone. "I hadn't." "Too bad," said Brennan.
Well, he kind of wrote that.
What did you mean by that? You got something against Bruni?
Because for me, it's like a badge of honor because it shows that it's truly wild. And about one out of, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 or so, there's truly a bird shot in it. So he took it. He only took one part of what I said. I said, did you get some bird shot? And he goes, "No, I didn't." I said, "Well, it's too bad because that's kind of like a badge of honor for us. We really want to, you know, show everybody that's really truly wild and people have fun with it. And you know, you could say we signed a dental waiver and blah blah blah." So he kind of took the thing out of, you know.
It was funny.
And I thought,
but after the review and he didn't like the color purple, I was like, well, I don't care if I said that or not.
I thought maybe you were afraid you were only going to get 2 stars.
No. But, hell, I thought the way he talked to me, I thought we were getting 4.
You know what's funny is I used to hunt with my dad when I was a kid, when I was a young teenager, and you know, my mom didn't know what to do with all this stuff, so we come home with you say woodcocks, we call them cockbirds and all different kind of birds, and we did small game hunting. I hated deer hunting as well,
right,
and we'd have squirrels and stuff, and it would all.
In my family, we only shot slow moving things. I brought you home some snails. Here's a.
But we would go in, and it would all go into a pot. And it would all be like a hunter's stew.
Right.
And I love now. I only wish now that I had, you know, knew what I knew about cooking when coming home with all those different things. But
yeah.
I don't have to. I can just go to Picheline next week and,
and have the game tasting.
And you can do it for me.
We're
going to be back in just a moment talking with Terrence Brennan about game at his restaurant, Picheline in Manhattan. You can find out how to make reservations and go there on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. It's a seasonal thing. Strike while the iron is hot. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking with Terrence Brennan, who owns Picheline and artisanal restaurants in New York City, as well as artisanal premium cheese. Terrence, you own a Picheline restaurant.
Yes.
And that is hard by the Lincoln Center. We own a restaurant called Stage Left, which is right next to three theaters in downtown New Brunswick. There are some unique challenges to trying to run a restaurant that has integrity and has good food that also services a theater clientele. What's that like at Picheline?
It's very difficult because we do everything exactly the same as we do, you know, for the 8 o'clock seating, and we don't cook anything in advance. We cook it to order. In the beginning, it was very difficult because it took a lot to get used to. As a matter of fact, we used to be a la carte, but I changed it to the minimum of two courses because we never had, you know, some people come in and just order a main course, and because we cooked everything in order, we could not, it would just put a juggernaut into our system.
Right, it's still 30 minutes, it's still 30 minutes to cook that bird, whether you had something before it or not.
And cook it properly, so it's tough. We got to get everyone psyched up, every service. It's just like, you got to get people pumped up, you got to stay on top of it, you got to get those early tables going and moving, and it's intense. This time around, though, I've kind of I'm playing with it because Lincoln Center is just totally is different times, 7:30 curtain, 7 o'clock curtain. So we're trying not to really worry about Lincoln Center anymore so much. I mean, it used to be our bread and butter, but you know they're having a hard time filling up. So I'm just trying to do a great New York City restaurant where we're not just booking every table for pre theater. We're doing 6:30s and 7, 6:45, so it spreads it out a little bit more because, you know, with the new design of the restaurant, there's a few less seats, so we want people to you know, to have a finer experience.
I think the only change that we really tried to make, I think that there are just certain things you cannot do pre theater.
Right.
You can be great and you can do great things, but there are a few things that you just can't do in a pre theater environment.
Yeah, that's what I struggle with because I want people to have the same experience and have the same food as second seating because I want them to see what we're doing and then come back, you know, on a special occasion or something. So I'm always like, I end up always having the same menu. And it's just sometimes it, you know, puts the staff in a little bit of a...
You know,
the other thing that I always have to convince my staff of, and this is something that is hard because this is not the way you do it at 8:05, for instance, as you do at you know, 6:05.
Right.
And what I try to explain to my waiters is you just need to cajole people a little bit into getting their orders into the kitchen, getting things started.
Right.
And I try and explain to them that almost every table who's going to the theater would rather be rushed 5 minutes in the beginning than 5 minutes at the end.
Hey, exactly. Because, you know, even if they're rushed, they're gonna hard to pick up that phone again and say, listen, I didn't have time for coffee and I'm spending this kind of money, why go there? But here's a little trick that I can share with you, and you probably know this, is that, you know, everybody, as they should, think they're the only table in the restaurant, and they come with a fork up and they start chatting when they sit down. Even, you know, especially the earlier tables where they feel they have 2 hours.
They have plenty of time.
They do, but as professionals, it's up to us to manage, and we know what we're doing and we know what's going to happen next. And so what invariably happens is people sit down, they start chatting. You either give them the menu and they don't look at it. So what we instruct our wait staff to do is they take their cocktail order and you say, okay, I'll be right back to take your order. Then they go, oh, they stop chatting and hopefully they look at the menu and when you get back you can take the order because, you know, in our type of restaurant, people want to have a cocktail and, you know, and talk a little bit before, you know, you don't just sit down and boom. So we try and do little tricks like that where they don't really notice it so much, but we're putting a little bit of pressure to get the order from them.
You know, I think it's very interesting and people don't realize, and when we learned the hard way, when we opened in our neighborhood, we were the only restaurant in our neighborhood and we would literally fill entirely at 5:30, empty entirely at 8:05, and, you know, fill entirely again.
Used to do that, yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I put 4 years on me. You know,
it's better
and
now.
No matter how great the meal is, the most important thing for them to do is make that curtain. Because at Lincoln Center, I don't know how it is there. If they miss the opera, the first call, they're out for the next.
And the first act.
to the second act, which, you know, it's a long time.
Well, you know, but the interesting thing is, I think a lot of people don't realize that when you're running a fine dining restaurant, pre-theater and post-theater, it's almost like we run two different restaurants. The food's the same, but it takes, and we, like you, we don't rely so much on the theater anymore. It's not 80% of our business anymore.
Right.
But it's really a very different take on dining. And, you know, I think that a lot of the pre-theater restaurants and restaurants in the theater district, the reason you can sit down, order, and the food comes out right away, you know, as a foodie, if that happens, I'm alarmed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, right. And, you know, we're okay. Like, especially the earlier tables, I'll push them even more because they understand, you know, we're trying to get them out on time. And I actually experienced it myself firsthand a couple of weeks ago. I went to the opera and came to my restaurant, and I sat down and went over to the opera and said, you know, so this is what, you know, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and again, it's funny. It's at the end. If you have a couple of extra minutes to have coffee at the end before you go to the theater because they rushed you a little in the beginning, you'll forgive me. If I don't rush you in the beginning and you don't get your desserts until 2 minutes before you've got to go, you will not forgive me.
I don't find anybody that, because we even give a muse pre-theater, which I'm often on the fence about. So we give a muse, and then, you know,
how frightening.
Yeah, we do one little adaptation there. Instead of doing individual, we do it for the table. Each person has two, for a couple, I mean. So we expedite a little bit that way, but we still give a muse, which I'm often thinking maybe that's not necessary.
Well, Terrence, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us about all the great things that you do, especially about the bird's menu at Picheline.
It has been a pleasure, and don't be surprised to see the restaurant guys in your restaurant between Christmas and New Year's.
I'll be looking for you. You only got about a month to go.
And remember us for the Scotland trip. That's what we're going to say.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, we'll see you now.
Thanks so much, Terrence.
Happy holidays.
You too.
Same to you. That's Terrence Brennan, thrice nominated Best New York Chef by the James Beard Foundation, talking about his restaurants, Picheline and Artisanal Brasserie. You can find out about those restaurants on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and go for the Game Bird menu. It's the best
we're going to talk about ordering cheese when you come back.
For a gift or for home for the holidays. There's still time. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Francis and Mark of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We were talking about cheese, and it seems only fair that we should tell you how you can get your hands on some cheese.
Back in the day when Francis and I first started doing this cheese thing in 93, 94, when we first really got into the whole cheese thing, really the only avenue for really good cheese, we drove into New York City. We went to Dean and DeLuca's cheese counter.
Or Murray's Cheese Shop.
Or Murray's Cheese Shop, and we purchased cheese, as you would, for a party. We say, except we purchased 20 times more. And that was the only way a great restaurant could have a cheese course was to go to one of these two top cheese.
And if you're not really into cheese, or you're wondering what the heck we're talking about, you're like, those restaurant guys are crazy. I slice up my cheddar and it's delicious. That's not what we're talking about. By the way, I slice my cheddar and it's delicious as well. But there are, you know, Terrence Brennan just said that cheese is the new wine. There are lots of cheeses made by small producers and American artisanal cheeses. You know, there are lots of people in America making goat cheeses and cow's milk cheeses and sheep's milk cheeses that are really tremendous and need to be at a certain level of ripeness. And you take the cheese out of your refrigerator and let it come up to room temperature and then cut yourself a little piece of cheese. And cheese will keep. It'll keep for like hours and hours. You know, it was designed to preserve milk in the beginning. Where you want to go to get good cheese, the easiest place is there are two places, and first is artisanal premium cheese. I think it's you can Google it to find artisanal online. We'll put the link up on our website.
We'll make sure we put a link on our site.
And you can order as a consumer, and they will send you some cheese.
They'll ship to you.
And you can send it to somebody for the holidays, and if you're wondering how the heck could cheese be so important that we talk about it for a whole show or half a show, you can go to artisanalcheese.com. And Murray's Cheese, you can also buy as a consumer online.
You know, we didn't talk about the restaurant Artisanal. It is a restaurant entirely, you know, devoted to cheese.
Mm-hmm.
From start to finish, every course entirely devoted to cheese.
And it's pretty darn awesome. There's a whole bunch of French brasserie, but everything from fondue to the cheese course in the end. And you can also go there to Artisanal Brasserie and walk up, and there's a little cheese shop in the back that has amazing selection of cheeses. Well, hope you've enjoyed the cheesy show. This is Francis Schott.
He's the cheesy guy. I'm Mark Pascal.
We're the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.